On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Actor Sean Penn takes to the big screen this weekend in the new film version of Robert Penn Warren's earthy classic of wild Southern politics, All the King's Men. It's the story of a charismatic poor man's hero, demagogue, and constitution-busting near-dictator, and it's based on the real-life story of Louisiana's legendary Depression-era governor, senator, populist-turned-tyrant, Huey Long. They called him Kingfish, and before an assassin's bullet killed him in 1935, he seized more control over an American state than any politician before or since. In a time when the boundaries of the national constitution are being tested, this is a story that turns heads again. Up next, On Point, All the King's Men, and the cautionary tale of Louisiana's Huey Long. We will hear in this hour from the producer of the new Sean Penn film, Mike Medavoy. But first, joining us from deep in Huey Long country in Lafayette, Louisiana, is biographer Richard White, author of Kingfish, The Reign of Huey P. Long. He's professor of public administration at Louisiana State University, the school that Huey built. Richard White, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom. Glad to be with you.
Also with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. He's author of The Rascal King, The Life and Times of James Michael Curley, perhaps the North's answer to Huey Long. Jack, good to have you.
Good to be here, Tom, and hello, Richard.
Hello, Jack.
Richard White, first of all, I think you've seen this film, and you've seen it in Louisiana. What did you make of it? How did the crowd take it?
Good. We welcome anything about Louisiana here. Sean Penn did a super job. It's a nice piece of work, and we enjoyed it.
That's terrific. We'll hear more about that. We've got a multi-leveled story here, and I wish you'd begin to take us in. But, of course, we've got Robert Penn Warren's novel, comes out in the late 40s, which is based on the life of Huey Long and his Depression-era rule in Louisiana. Richard White, you write in your book, you say, according to novelist Robert Penn Warren, Huey Long exploited one of the great flaws of democracy, for ironically, democracy itself allowed an ambitious and remorseless leader like Huey to exploit the weaknesses and fears of the people and ultimately to employ democratic means to achieve undemocratic ends. We'll have a lot of listeners who know a lot about Huey Long and others who know nothing. Introduce us first to the historical figure behind the book, the movie, the whole thing.
Well, Huey Long grew up in rural North Louisiana. He was not the son of poor people, as a lot of people imagine.
So he says, "I was born barefoot." Then who wasn't? I guess.
No, he was from a very poor region, but his family was relatively middle class. They were well educated. All of his brothers and sisters went to college, but Huey liked to play the populist message that he was a poor boy and barefoot, and he'd wear socks with a toe sticking out. He grew up in North Louisiana, read for the law, became a young country lawyer, ran for office as a railroad commissioner, and then ran for governor, and the rest, the quest for power starts at that point.
So what year does he get office in Louisiana as governor?
He ran for governor in 1924 and lost. He came in third in a tough race. And the day he lost in 1924, he started running again for the 1928 election, which he won.
There he won, became governor, U.S. senator, ultimately a candidate for the presidency, and seen as a real threat by FDR for all kinds of reasons, and then assassinated. You describe him as the governor who seized more control over an American state than any politician before or since. What was the Huey Long appeal? What was the sort of tyrant's way in the way he exercised that appeal?
Well, he promised the poor people of Louisiana hope. I mean, it was the chicken in every pot message. And once he got their votes, he used that populist power to take over the state. And he took over every aspect of governance in Louisiana. Every cabinet officer, every workman shoveling gravel on the roads, every school teacher, every sheriff's deputy, every one of them could not get their job without Huey's approval. He stuffed every ballot box. He used kidnappings if he had to. Every ruse of political chicanery that he could come up with, he used to gain absolute power over an American state and an American democracy.
Orchestrated elections, you write, padded voting lists, directed the counting of ballots himself, prohibited newspapers from printing stories that scorned him, deployed the state militia as his personal police force, declared martial law in cities that refused to submit to his orders, packed the courts. I mean, right on down the line, he would make up legislation sort of on the fly and demand that the legislature pass it, and they would. Why? Why did everybody bend to this man?
When I was writing this book, Kingfish, I was amazed as I wrote it, because I'd write a page and I would think, well, he can't go further than this. And then the next page, he would go further. And the next page, he would go even further. And finally, he's shot. And you wonder, how far could he have gone if he had lived?
Jack Beatty, FDR had his eye on this man. This wasn't just a Louisiana story. Once he got to the U.S. Senate, he made a lot of waves.
Oh, he did. And he got off. He helped FDR get elected. He was very important at the Chicago Convention in 1932 in getting FDR nominated. But soon they fell out. He visited FDR at Hyde Park in a florid costume. He dressed always like a kind of carnival barker, and carried on with Roosevelt while talking to him to such an extent that Sarah Roosevelt, his very proper mother, could be heard off audibly saying, "Who is that awful man?" and then after the election, he went to see Roosevelt at the White House. This is Franklin Roosevelt. He took off his straw hat, and to emphasize his points, was tapping Roosevelt on his dead knees with his straw hat. You see, Frank. And then just to vary it, on Frank's elbow. Well, you don't treat Franklin Roosevelt like that. And they fell out there. And then their rivalry was for power. And Roosevelt said that he was one of the two most dangerous men in America, the other one being Douglas MacArthur, the military dictator, the dictator of the right, and the socialist challenge, the leftist challenge from Long. So, but some historians think that he actually had a constructive role in the New Deal, in that he pushed it to the left, that there was a second New Deal in 1935, Social Security, the expansion of the National Youth Administration, other things, that that was in response to the fear of Huey essentially being an independent candidate for president, splitting the ticket, electing a Republican. And Long himself said, "You elect a Republican in 36, and I'll be elected in 40 because the country will go to hell."
It could have happened. Let's get the voice, the actual voice of Huey Long. No actor, no novelized version here in our ear. Here he is, Huey Long, from a radio address, May 2nd, 1935. He's then a senator, proposing his Share the Wealth program. He says to America, "If you believe in nothing else, at least anyone can see his, as he says, America's gap of wealth."
"Ladies and gentlemen, whether you do or do not believe in the divine rule of the scriptures, or in the precepts of the founders of this country, or in the history of philosophy of all nations, if you will believe the four tables of arithmetic, those of addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division, you will agree with me that the wealth of this land must be immediately redistributed among our 125 million people if America is to be saved as a country."
There you go. There was the appeal, absolutely unvarnished. He may have trampled democracy, but as you write, Richard White, he did more than any politician before or since, especially for the poor of Louisiana. 9,000 miles of new roads, we heard Sean Penn yelling about it, pulling Louisiana out of the horse and buggy days, you write, gave free books to poor students, allowed thousands to attend school, doubled the number of beds in state's charity hospitals, raised the state's universities to a national stature, you know, tax relief for poor farmers, right on down the line. He really was there for the poor.
He really was, especially in his first years as governor. He needed to solidify his populist appeal with the people, and he gave them that hope he had promised them earlier. Unfortunately, when he became senator, he no longer needed that response, that power from the people, and most of these reforms stopped. He turned his sights to national office, to the Share the Wealth program, and in many ways started taxing the people of Louisiana worse than they were taxed before.
And in his unbridled energy and ambition, revealed the fragility of democracy, you write. Exactly how was that exposed?
Well, he twisted democracy to his own ends. He twisted democracy and created America's only dictatorship. The people gave him unbridled power, and he used it to his own devices. Everything Huey Long did was to increase his power. Every waking moment, and he hardly ever slept. He was a brilliant man, absolutely genius, and he used that genius to devise the most brilliant stratagems for increasing power.
We'll hear in just a moment from producer of the new film, but let's have the film in our ear. Here's a scene from the new Hollywood film, All the King's Men. Willie Stark, based on Huey Long, played here by Sean Penn, is campaigning for governor as a populist.
But listen to me, you hicks. That's right. I'm not the only one here. You hicks, too. They fooled you, too. Just like they fooled me 1,000 times.
But it's time I fooled somebody.
It's time I fooled them. Them big city stocking pants, Nick Spittle, hick haters. I'm running for governor on my own. I'm coming for them, and I'm coming for blood.
I'm coming for him, and I'm coming for you. Joining us now from Los Angeles, Mike Medavoy, producer of the film All the King's Men. He's chairman and co-founder of Phoenix Pictured, made The Thin Red Line, Basic, The People vs. Larry Flint, co-founded Orion Pictures in 1978, produced Platoon, Amadeus, Silence of the Lambs. Mike Medavoy, thanks very much for being with us. Why this film now?
Well, I mean, there's certain parallels, I would think. First of all, it's a great story.
Sure is.
You know, you can do a great story almost any time, especially, I mean, you know, Hamlet was done, I think, has been done 11 times. You know, I was fascinated by this story because it deals with more than just politics. I mean, it just deals with, you know, human nature. And, you know, the kind of gray, you know, not just the stark blacks and whites of most movies, but rather the fact that all of us are gray, that there isn't, you know, a person can claim they've never done anything wrong.
Huey Long, maybe gray, but also technicolor. Hollywood's looked to him before 1949, all kinds of nominated for 7 Oscars, 1-3, Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress there with Broderick Crawford and Mercedes McCambridge. Blaze came out later with Paul Newman, another take on the story. What's the gloss that it gets this time with Sean Penn and Patricia Clarkson and Mark Ruffalo, Jude Law, all the rest? What's the angle that this version of Robert Penn Warren's novel takes?
Well, the director has said it several times, and I can't, quite frankly, I can't remember the Broderick Crawford version if I saw it, and the director's never seen it, and so we basically went back to the book.
All new, ground up from Robert Penn Warren then.
Absolutely, and interestingly enough, actually, we showed the film at Yale, and the daughter, Robert Penn Warren's daughter, was there, and the man who runs the estate for Robert Penn Warren, and you know, both of them were really moved. I mean, this came closer to them than the previous movie did, and this film was to them is a lot more about populism. And the other film was, which they felt was more about absolutism. You know, it's interesting to me, what was interesting to me is the fact that Penn Warren, you know, took this idea. He was, I guess, living in Italy in 1938, and took the idea from watching both Mussolini and Hitler. The fact that they had, you know, all of these promises made to people, including running the trains on time. You know, and in effect, really, he never says, by the way, that it's about Huey Long in the book, and he never says that it is, you know, a film set in Louisiana.
But he sure ended up in Louisiana when looking at that state. Richard White, how about it? You've got the producer here of the new version. You've seen it. We just heard the clip of Sean Penn. With all that, fiery identity with the poor crowd, you hicks, and he's talking about himself there, too, lots of anger. What did you make of Sean Penn's portrayal of Willie Stark from the book or Huey Long from history? How does it line up with your understanding of the man, Richard White?
I think it does an excellent job of expanding our understanding of a demagogue. I agree with Mike that the new movie does take the populist vent as opposed to the old movie, which I have seen, which was more of a demagogue-like character with Broderick Crawford. So this movie does expand on that sense. I think it would be unfair to hold the movie to historical questions, though. The movie's a work of art. And like Robert Penn Warren said, he claimed it was not taken after Huey Long. I think he said that because of his lawyers, though. It's the parallel is just too close. But the lessons are still the same. We still have to watch our leaders. We still have to understand that democracy is very fragile. And that point, I think, is brought out by this movie very well. And I think people need to see it just for that reason.
Mike Medavoit, we just got you for a minute here. It opens this weekend. Do you think America, the big American audience, is open to, of course it's a movie about people, but it is about politics and populism. Are these themes that are going to bring them into the theaters now?
Well, you know, nobody knows whether any movie will bring, you know, people to the theater until it opens, you know, to get people into the seats. But, you know, you probably have to do extraordinary things because, for all intents and purposes, you know, people are often brought in by either laughs or horror movies or whatever other things that are out there that they feel are going to entertain them. But my sense is that the film does do that. And beyond that, it probably is so current in its, you know, its sense of what is going on. The issue of the extreme poor and the very rich, the fact that the levees in Louisiana were obviously, you know, had obvious problems, the fact that there is racism, I mean, all of those bells are rung in the film. Now, if people want to, you know, want to hear that or don't want to hear it, or if they just basically want to stick their head in the sand and pretend they're ostriches, you know, then that's a different issue.
There's the word from L.A. from a producer who's put a lot up on the screen, Mike Medavoit, author of You're Only as Good as Your Next One. Producer Medavoit, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Let's get a little more of this film in our ears. Here's Willie Stark from the Robert Penn Warren novel, played here by Sean Penn, talking to his right-hand man, Jack Burden, played by Jude Law. Jack Burden comes from a prominent family. The scene here shows the conflict working for Stark that's created for him.
How you doing digging something up on Judge Irwin?
Nothing.
Nothing. Found nothing, done nothing.
Told you there was nothing to find. I could dig to China, wouldn't find anything. And I'm not framing him.
Framing? Ain't nobody talking about framing. That's never necessary. The truth is always sufficient. You just find the truth.
It's a waste of time and money.
Jesus, doesn't anybody listen to what I say anymore? You don't want to do it, don't do it.
Or you're just looking for a raise. I'm going to give you a $100 raise whether you want it or not.
If I wanted more money, I'd make it.
You going to tell me you work for me for love?
I don't know why I work for you, but it ain't for love or money.
Well, that's right, it's not. And you don't know why. But I do.
Why?
Boy, you work for me because I'm the way I am and you the way you are.
Sean Penn as Willie Stark, a.k.a. Huey Long, in the new film version of All the King's Men, there with Jude Law. Right now from Los Angeles, we're joined by Scott Bowles, film critic for USA Today. Scott, thanks very much for being with us. What do you make of this film?
Well, this is a movie that has gotten a lot of attention, primarily for Sean Penn's performance. It's fading a little bit in terms of awards, Best Picture momentum, but this is a film that's going to have a few acting candidates. It's doing very well with the critics in that area. Sean Penn, Anthony Hopkins, Kate Winslet are getting a lot of accolades for their roles in the film.
Populism, demagoguery, politics, ambition. Are these themes that you see resonating today? Do you see them resonating through the film?
Well, that was certainly why Steve Zaillian and Sean Penn wanted to make the movie. If we're going to be honest about motive here, Sony needs a film that they can take into fall for Oscar consideration. But these are themes that Hollywood loves. They love them especially in the fall, the rise to power, the power of of corruption. Those are themes that have always worked. And, you know, this is a film that is 50 years old. The original was in 49. It won the Best Picture. This is an Oscar grab attempt by Sony. But certainly these are themes that appeal to the director, to Sean Penn, and to Hollywood at large.
I haven't seen it yet. I understand they've shifted the time frame for the story here, out of the Depression era.
They have. They have moved it a few years out only because they felt that that was going to be too dated. You're also going against other movies. Hollywood loves this. Everyone's Hero is an animated film that's set in the Depression. Studios are very aware of what time periods are getting covered by their competitors, and they felt that that era was simply too dated. They wanted to make this a little more universal in its time frame to appeal to today's audiences.
We're going to dig into the film and into the story of Huey long behind it. Scott Bowles is with us from USA Today, Richard White and Jack Beatty with us as well, and a lot of listeners who want to join us. Let me turn to Nashville and John. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Am I there?
Yes, you are.
Great. I just wanted to relate a story. Just to put it in context, I'm a photographer that was on assignment for Time magazine down in the Katrina area, and I interviewed a man that was displaced from Jefferson Parish, an old man, Frank Briers, it was his name. He's 91 years old.
Mm.
And he told me he remembers when all the levees around New Orleans were basically mud, and the long people had, you know, had public works projects going on.
Yeah.
And he said Long had this saying, it was called, "The ducks are flying."
What did it mean?
Well, it basically meant deductions. When the state would offer contracts for people to build public work, you know, projects and stuff.
So deductions as in his piece of the pie.
Yeah, in other words, if he the state contracted someone to put down a 12-inch thick slab of concrete,
right,
and he said, "The ducks are flying," well, they would put 10 inches. And the kickback went back to, you know.
So your 91-year-old saw that even in the levees in Katrina.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I found the man. He was at a KOA campground in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Wow.
Living in an RV. And I sat there and talked to him, and he remembered, you know, all these Long very well and all this stuff.
And still seeing it, even Katrina, through the eyes, the perspective of Huey Long.
Right.
Richard White, John, thanks for your call from Nashville. Richard White, you wrote this spring that there's a kind of, at least in your heart, a little longing for Huey Long in this whole Katrina mess. Why?
Well, Huey was certainly a strong leader, and he was a decision maker. He was a brilliant man, and if Katrina had hit in 1934, I guarantee we would have known exactly who was in charge. It would not have been confusion between the federal government, the state government, and the city government. You'd know Huey would have been in charge. He would have come to the aid of the people. But he would also have used it to his own political advantage. He would have if he hadn't completely controlled the city by then, a Katrina would have given him the opportunity to order martial law and to keep martial law, and the city would have been under Huey's vice grip from then on.
Share some more jewels of history with us here, Richard White. You talk about his brilliance and immense energy. You say it would have been on display after something like Katrina. How did he display it in his lifetime, that energy?
He was a ball of fire. He never slept. If he couldn't win an argument, he would just wear you out. He spoke in the Senate on his feet for 16 solid hours. No one has surpassed that feat. He spoke all night, and the other senators were asleep. The gallery was empty. The sun is coming up, and Huey is still going. So the combination of energy, brilliance, and blind ambition was overpowering.
Jack Beatty, you've got an anecdote about how he sold himself so well in Louisiana.
Right. Well. T. Harry Williams begins his monumental Huey Long with this story. Huey's campaigning for governor, and he's campaigning in the south of the state in Catholic Cajun country, and then goes to the north of the state in Protestant country. And wherever he goes, he tells the people, he says, "You know, when I was a boy, I'd hitch up that team in the morning, and I'd take my Catholic grandparents to Mass and come home and unhitch to have a little. And then a little bit later in the afternoon, I'd hitch up that team again, take my Baptist grandparents to meeting. And driving back, and the audiences loved it. Here was Louisiana, North and South, Catholic and Protestant, Cajun, and Pineywood joined in one man's family. So he's driving back with a local Paul from the north of the state after the end of this day, and the fella says to him, "Huey, that was just wonderful, that story. My gosh, I never knew you had Catholic grandparents." He says, "You damn fool, I didn't even have a horse."
He used whatever he had. Scott Bowles, do we see that garrulous kind of magician with the people in this film with Sean Penn?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the great things about Sean Penn is that, love him or hate him, if you disagree with his politics or not, he researches a role. And Sean went through as many parishes as he could through New Orleans and Louisiana to get the dialect down. He read a good bit on both Huey and Earl Long, and then went to evangelical churches because he felt that both Huey and Earl had been influenced by evangelical preachers, and puts that into his mannerisms, into his speech. And at first it's a bit jarring, but you really begin to understand some of the charisma he's bringing to the role. And Huey and that character was made for the screen, and Sean takes it and runs with it.
An amazing way with money. Richard White, you quote him talking about how much money he would work with. Enough money to burn a wet mule. Wow, it doesn't get better than that. I mean, this guy could talk.
Well, I used that quotation that the fellow from Nashville brought in about the D-ducks are flying. And what that refers to is what's called the D-duck box. And all state workers had to contribute at least 10% of their salary into the D-duck box, which went to fund Huey's machine.
Tithing buying, for Huey.
Buying votes, corrupt, buying off other politicians and judges. Buying new suits for Huey.
Let's listen back to April 1935, Huey Long pushing Roosevelt and the New Deal. It wasn't good enough for him. He wanted more. Let's hear it.
"Instead of his promises, the only remedy that Mr. Roosevelt has prescribed is to borrow more money if he can and to go further into debt. The last move was to borrow $5 billion more, on which we must pay interest for the balance of our lifetime and probably during the lifetime of our children. And with it all, there stalks a slimy specter of want, hunger, destitution, and pestilence, all because of the fact that in the land of too much to eat and of too much to wear, our president has failed in his promise to have these necessities of life distributed into the hands of the people who have need of them."
The slimy specter of want, hunger, destitution, and pestilence, and FDR wasn't good enough for Kingfish Huey Long. Terrence is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Terrence. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks ever so much, Tom. I really appreciate the story of D-Ducks. I'm only about 10 miles away from a huge project, a $14 billion project. And if the 10% deduct went into that, that's $1.4 billion.
Boston's big dig, sinking the highway there, and plenty of problems there. What do you make of Huey Long?
Well, I think the question is whether it's populism or absolutism or fascism. I think the problem is not that you find individuals like Huey Long or Hitler or Mussolini or others who do that just because of their charisma or because of their prowess, but because they have a financial, mostly a financial, but also a political backing that enables them to climb to the heights that they reach. And I'd appreciate it perhaps if someone would be able to say something about Huey Long's financial and political backings.
Terrence, let us look straight at it, and thanks for your call. Richard White, what about it? Did he build it from the ground up? Did he have some deep pocket behind him?
He did have a couple of angels who gave him enough money to get off the ground. But once he got the voice of the people behind him and won that governorship the first time, he was almost bulletproof, to use a sad term, in his life. His deduct box, the corrupt practices, you know, building the 10-inch roads when they were supposed to be 12-inch, getting the kickback on concrete and clamshells and bridge contracts and school contracts, it became a self-generating business. He started his own newspaper, for example, which was to quash the real press, and that was a money-making proposition. So Huey was a shrewd businessman. He knew how to fund his political machine, and by the time he was killed in 1935, it was very well oiled.
Jack Beatty, there's a lot of equation these days between, you know, the wielding of power and huge money, corporate money, and all the rest. I'm hearing something a little more nuanced here. I mean, he's reaching right into the public purse, into teachers' pockets, but also to the little guy.
To the little guy. You know, two things should be borne in mind. I'm sure Richard brings this out in his book. It wasn't as if this happened in a vacuum. Louisiana was an oligarchy when he came to it. It led the nation in illiteracy. It had fewer roads than any state in the nation. It was ruled by a combination of oil companies and old Bourbon Democrats and a corrupt New Orleans machine. So the violence in Huey and the we got to throw over these people, there was something to throw over. And Penn Warren, you know, taught at LSU, and he left a picture of what Huey meant there. He said, among the students, there sometimes appeared that awkward boy from the depths of the Cajun country or from some Scrabble farm in North Louisiana with burning ambition and frightening energy. And his presence there, you reminded yourself, seemed necessary, was due to Huey and to Huey alone. For the better element had done next to nothing in 50 years to get that boy out of the grim despair of his ignorance. And that was what Huey did. On the other hand, there was no minimum wage law. There was no unemployment compensation. There was no appropriation for widows or aged mothers. He said picking cotton is fun for kids anyway. No social legislation. In short, he only did the kinds of things that would get him kickbacks. He only did the roads and the bridges and so on, not the redistributive stuff that the New Deal did that actually helped ordinary people. In fact, the New Deal did far more for Louisiana, 80,000 people employed on New Deal projects there as against 8,000 on his roads. So his populism was, his corruption was sort of woven into the populism.
Scott Bowles, how about the new movie, All the King's Men and Sean Penn? Does it depict, in Sean Penn's portrayal here, Huey Long as man of deep pocket powers or of the people and riding that to tyranny?
Yeah, that's one thing that Hollywood absolutely takes license with, in that it's very much a rags to riches. He is simply a poor man trying to speak the truth. It's sort of a Rocky story, which works better for Hollywood. But what I found interesting in Huey's story and in what's been happening lately in Hollywood is that they're almost trying to tap into a similar populism. You are seeing films like Syriana, Good Night and Good Luck, in this film, where Hollywood is essentially trying to bring the people up against government in stories that they feel are parallel to contemporary times. They won't come out and say, this is what we're facing today, but when you begin to talk with them, they feel like there's a certain unrest among people, not only with government, but with Hollywood. And you're seeing the industry essentially try to find that populist taproot, at least at the box office.
That's a kind of double backflip. We'll see how it works here. Let's take a call from Nashville. Linda's on the line. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A while ago, you asked the question if the Constitution had ever come closer to being shredded, and I feel that it is now. That's one point that I'd like to make.
It is now. We're looking at Huey Long in Louisiana in the Depression. You're looking right now. Of course, people talk about the Constitution being stretched. Do you see a parallel?
Oh, absolutely. There are a lot of parallels. You know, the thing is, whenever you have very, very poor people, you're going to have an opportunity for someone to utilize that and to control them, because poverty makes people need something. But in this instance, we're using fear and a lot of other things to try to control the populace, and it's pretty scary.
You're talking nationally. Let us put it to Richard Wright. Richard, do you see parallels today that work with Huey Long, or do they get down to such, you know, basic fragility issues that it's not exact?
Well, as a historian, I would say there have always been parallels. There have always been abuses of the Constitution throughout our history. Huey's situation is probably one of the most extremes. He was attacked on the floor of the Louisiana House of Representatives one time by one of the other representatives who picked up a copy of the Louisiana Constitution and said, Huey, you need to read this. And Huey took it from him, threw it away, shredded it, and said, I am the Constitution in Louisiana.
Hello, U.S. Constitution 2006. Jack Beatty, useful parallels here, or in his sort of florid Southern Louisiana way, is he, as he himself said, sui generis?
Well, I think he was, but I think our caller makes a good point. This is always a danger, especially in times of crisis. And I hear it, frankly, in the morning. I listen every day to C-SPAN. They have a call-in program. I listen every day, callers calling in. And again, I hear people saying, President Bush is our commander-in-chief. Mm. We need to follow. He is not our commander-in-chief. He's the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. And I hear that again and again, and that really worries me, the sentiment that might be behind that.
The conflation of all powers in one man.
Yeah.
Let's go to Wellesley, Massachusetts. John is calling. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. One of the big differences between this movie and the 1949 movie is that the 1949 movie was about straightforward corruption. Willie gets on the take to the big money, and he loses his way. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the big differences about this movie is that it's about something that happens to you if you take the ideal of justice seriously. Now, Willie has this slogan: "Your need is my justice." Your need is my justice. Now, what that means is that he sees himself as answering urgent, horrible human needs mm-hmm. that none of the political institutions of that state have taken seriously at all, and which the political institutions in that state are indeed constructed not to answer. Mm. So he sees himself as somebody who is willing to break the law to serve justice, because law and justice are in tension.
Right.
Now, I think that that's a far more serious problem than the problem of power corrupting, because that represents the prophetic temptation that's been very dangerous in politics throughout the 20th century.
John, stick with us.
The temptation to be tyrannized by an ideal of good.
Right.
The way Robespierre was, or the way Lenin was.
John, stick with us. Jack, how about it? Here's not the history, but the novel, Robert Penn Warns, but of course a lot of it revolves around that. And this wonderful, insidious phrase that he has, Willie Stark standing in for Huey Long Hughes: "Your need is my justice."
Yeah, and I think, and our caller makes a good point, that the extremity of the need licenses any means to satisfy it. Penn Warren has this picture of Huey basically, or Stark, needing power to get anything done in this world. You have to have power, and so you get the power to get the thing done. But then the power itself becomes the subject, and you just want more power. But then you say, but I need the more power to take care of people's needs. So you get more power. And then the power pretty soon means and ends get all tangled up once we go beyond the law. You know, there was a lot of talk like this before the Civil War, that the law, we had to have a higher law and so on. And it's always dangerous when we counterpose justice to the law. They can be opposed. But in a complicated society, the best way to justice is through the law and through that Constitution.
Caller John, let me ask you. Our caller Linda from Nashville was saying she saw fear as the thing being potentially exploited today, not so much poverty as in Huey Long's time. Is that the need that we're seeing this quote-unquote justice brought to today?
I don't see much contemporary parallels with the either the Long situation or Warren's novel here, and that's partly because, frankly, the president is a far more venal figure than Willie Stark is.
that's a big claim. Let us pick that up, John. Thanks for your call, Richard White. I don't know how to compare. I mean, first of all, there's a characterization. You can take it or leave it. Are you prepared to compare these men on these grounds? Willie Stark, fictional character, Huey Long standing behind him, and the personality, the political profile of our sitting president?
No, absolutely not. I think the times have changed. Politics and American bureaucracy is so much more complex now. There are so many more checks and balances. Mm-hmm. We have a free and open press. The election rules are much more defined and legalistic, so the opportunity for the extremes that a Huey Long could get away with are no longer there at the state, federal, or local level. Now we still run the risk of a demagogue if, say, the economy were to go into another depression where people really had fear, where people really worried about their next meal. And then we could start, as Franklin Roosevelt feared, worshiping false gods again.
But isn't there real fear on the security front today? I mean, it is at a national scale. We've got big Republican senators now warning that we're getting off base. Colin Powell saying we're losing our moral standing. The Supreme Court talking about the Constitution, feeling the pressure of an executive wanting to act in response to these threats. Isn't there something to look at there?
Well, yes. Government in general is not popular. Since the Gallup poll has started polling Americans on popularity of government in 1950, the polls have gone continually down. And this is for a lot of reasons. Maybe it's the open press. Maybe it's the transparency of government. Maybe it's just our frustrations with government. But I wouldn't put today's times under the title of fear. I think there's a tension, certainly, with 9/11. But we're a very resilient people, and our economy is strong, and I don't think the comparisons go very far at all.
Jack Beatty, Richard White, in his biography, quotes a faculty member at Louisiana State, I don't know if it's a colleague or not, but saying, talking admiringly back about Huey Long and saying, if I had to choose between him without democracy and getting back the old crowd, corrupt before, without the good he's done, I would choose Huey. After all, he says, democracy isn't any good if it doesn't work. Do you really think freedom is so important?
Well, that's a faculty member. Huey said at one point, I can fire that faculty. I can fire the students. I don't think academic freedom would have been so high under Huey. You know, it's always possible to romanticize, and people say things like that. I don't think that man really meant it. And that's just frustration with the endless talking shop of our muddled democracy. But you know, it's probably better than the streamlined, long alternative any day.
Scott Bowles, Sean Penn has been a pretty outspoken political critic of the administration from Hollywood. How do you think audiences are going to come out of this new version of All the King's Men, looking at the world around them? Are they being directed very strongly to one perspective or another?
Well, they certainly are. This film is not as nuanced as All the King's Men, the book. We talked about some of the slogans. The most popular slogan in this film is "Nail 'em up," and it is in no small part an effort on Zalian and Penn to draw parallels, very simple parallels. Stark's character is not so much corrupt as he is the target of big government. In this film, Stark rails against oil and big government. It's very contemporary in the message, and that was very intentional. And certainly, Sean sees this as a platform to espouse his own political leanings. And he's a great actor. He's a little bit in danger now of having his public persona eclipse his fictional characters. But absolutely, Hollywood feels that they need to make a statement. They've been doing it now for about 2 years. And this is much simpler than the nuanced book and the messages that were espoused in that.
All the King's Men, the new Hollywood version, comes out this weekend. Scott Bowles with USA Today, thanks very much for bringing us The View in this hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Richard White, as you came out of the theater in New Orleans, what kind of comments did you hear? That kind of characterization of Scott's?
Yes, absolutely. I think the audience came out of the theater with a lot of questions in their mind. Questions about, you know, where are we? Where is democracy? Where do we get our leadership from?
They're raised high today. Professor White, we're out of time. Author of Kingfish, The Reign of Huey P. Long, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Jack Beatty, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.